You always hide from us. And what is your sun sign, Magnus?
My sun sign?
Yeah, of the zodiac. Astrological.
Cancer.
Cancer.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Yeah. I'm taking these because when we get up to Tarot, I'm going to be doing readings for you guys in class.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
When do we do that?
Well, that's in the last third of the course. Yeah, we have to go through tools first and such. But it will be coming, never fear. Okay, let's do our candles. Soggy strikers are non-useful. Who would like to bless for us? Who would like to lead the blessing? Well, let's just all do it together. You all ready?
Okay.
Okay? So, child of
wonder, child of flame,
nourish
spirit, and protect my aim.
Christ Unison, that sounded much like a, what was I thinking? Oh, you know, those old church singers. What were those called?
Carolers?
I'm sorry?
Carolers?
Well, no, back, you know, back in the 1800s and, oh, I can't think what you call it, the chanting, when they all would just go on and on and on, and there would be echoes, because it would be done in a huge cathedral.
Oh. Maybe we should make a CD.
We are making a CD, what do you mean?
That's right.
Everybody seems to be having jolly water experiences just from the levity of today, which is really the way it's meant to be. So, no protestations now. We all want to be positive about this. So, Randy, what kind of discoveries did you have doing With Compassion?
Well, With Compassion... Hold on a second. I just noticed that I had some more compassion for myself.
Good.
More compassion for all the kids that live around here. 20-year-old kids, you know.
Oh, not even 40-year-old kids?
Yeah, there are a few of them. Yeah, even 40-year-old kids.
So how do you experience compassion? How does it, how do you know that it's there?
Well, it's just a sort of a softness.
Okay, that's good. That's a good word.
Yeah.
So does it make you more, pliable, more,
Well, it makes me more accepting of my of the things in myself that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
More accepting of the things in others that I don't like. And I would say empathy.
Okay. Well, you know, you've hit on something quite interesting here. What makes, say, okay, something in yourself, I'm not asking you to reveal anything,
mm-hmm.
but something in yourself that you don't like, what makes you not like it?
Well, what makes me don't like it is the, I guess, the scripts that I wrote for myself.
Did you write those scripts, or did others write them for you?
Well, my parents wrote some of them.
Okay.
And it's, yeah, it's like, particularly when I get under a lot of stress, I get impatient, I get a little tense, a little irritated and angry and frustrated, and a lot of those are I guess the which is the way my father was most of my life, and so I guess it kind of harps back to my experience with him.
Okay, so it's really not you, is it?
No, I mean it's not me. I mean, okay.
Well, I only make this point, and obviously we're not going to resolve this week for anybody. But I was hoping that this would happen for you guys, that you would begin to see something about who am I and who am I not. Because water runs deep. And the fact is that it's so possible for almost all of us that what we don't like is not even us, in us. And I will make you all a promise and a commitment. If you do half the work this course asks you to do and all the other courses you're going to take in this school, you will become who you are. Now, that's a guarantee. And you will get to a point where you don't have that kind of judgment about self. You will experience a freedom that allows you to go towards your aims without that encumbrance of constant self-flagellation and judgment. But it starts here. It starts with compassion. Is that so, Randy?
I would agree with that.
Okay, cool. That was really good sharing. Dan, what did you discover?
I discovered that, well, I really didn't discover anything. I was just aware of a difference when I was in a state where I was being or feeling compassionate.
Let me stop you for a second. I'm going to ask everybody to speak up. We need, for good tape quality, we need about twice the volume of some of you all are giving me. So get either closer to your mic or your phone or turn your volume up. Are you all using headsets?
I am.
Yeah, if you are using a headset, they're wonderful because your hands are free, your body is free, and you can put that little mic closer to your mouth. So can you do that, Dan?
I've moved mine closer.
Good. Go ahead, Dan.
Okay. What I realized was when I was feeling in a state of being compassionate and being aware and sensitive, or when I was not. So it wasn't that I felt something that I don't normally feel. I just realized when I was in it or out of it.
So your awareness of your state was increased.
Right.
That's wonderful. How did you feel about the one versus the other? When you were, so if you weren't experiencing some level of compassion, where were you? More in your head?
Moment, I was experiencing compassion, but when I was in my head, I wasn't.
Okay. Okay. was there any difference in the quality of your life between those two times?
Being in the moment had more feeling to it.
Did time go faster?
No, it actually went slower.
Went slower. So you saw more, you perceived more.
Right.
Okay. Was time or your, no, not time. Was your experience more meaningful to you in compassion or with compassion or the opposite?
No, it was more meaningful with compassion.
Okay. Helen.
A lot happened this week. There was definitely I noticed in a more effortless way more self-love and much more flexibility and fluidity in terms of how I responded to what was an overwhelming number of things breaking down around me. I've never had a week like this. I had 2 flat tires. My email and website part of my computer crashed. The plumbing in my bathroom went haywire.
Water.
And a lot of grief work came up around my dad's death. What I noticed was that it seemed to call for, or how I responded was sort of alternating between periods of stillness and just letting it be and then having to really move into action and continuously being met with, things not going as arranged. Like a computer person was supposed to come to work on my computer on Wednesday and they forgot to come. The plumber came very late yesterday and then had to come back and is here now.
You don't sound very bothered.
It was kind of yes and no. I would notice some frustration started to come, but I was able, but it dissipated pretty quickly, and I just kind of responded more fluidly,
okay.
Like take whatever action I could and then just let it be what it was.
Okay. Now, this was a gift that you called for.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm speaking of?
Yeah.
Because I suspect, now tell me if I'm wrong, I suspect that up till now you've not done any serious review of the bank clearing we did.
Oh, no, I think I have.
But you got a real dose of it. Remember I said that events would come up that would model your past?
Yeah, this was the week they everything came.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And do you see that you did not respond according to how you've responded in the past?
In some ways, to these things, totally. There were some things that came up in the bank review where I still have a similar reaction.
Was that reaction mandated, or did you just do it by habit?
I'm not sure what you mean by mandated.
Well, bank reactions, I don't care what we do, we can't change them.
Okay, I was not in the areas that haven't been tested yet consisted more. Oh, that's not true. Wait a minute. There was one fear place dealing with forms and legal things that came up where I still had a fear reaction, but it lasted much less time than usual.
Okay, and did you act on whatever it was that you had to act on?
The timing is, I couldn't act on it yet. I can't act on it yet.
Oh, so you have not acted.
It's up in about 2 weeks. It got set into motion this week.
But, you know, when it came up, you didn't act on it.
I responded initially with a fear.
Right, I understand that.
Right, I couldn't act on it because I'm not going to get the papers for another 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were not able to act on it.
That's right.
Oh, okay. But then you don't really know whether you would act on it or not.
Right. The fear came up in my head.
Okay.
So I projected in time to when the actual papers arrived.
There you go. That's memory.
Right.
Because the only way you can test that is when the time comes, do you sign the papers or execute whatever is to be executed, or do you find yourself incapable of doing so?
Well, I always do it. It's just the quality of the process that I want changed.
So let's see what the quality of the process is when it happens.
Right.
Not in forethought.
Right. But in terms of...
Well, see, my point is, see, with any of this stuff, there's a lot of water involved here. And, you know, with any of these things, it's either clear or it's not clear. You can't have partial clearing. There's no such thing. So if you find that you can act on, you know, that some of this stuff came up and you have choice, you've got choice over the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
And so I would presume that your behavior this week for all the events that came up and all the dysfunctionality of events was not typical.
My response, or they're all coming like this in one week?
Oh, no, your response.
My response. No, there was much more permission to be fluid.
Okay. So with compassion obviously shifts you considerably, your reality.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, it was not only towards myself, but towards others.
Yeah, that's really cool. Magnus.
Yes, sir, I'm here. I think with the affirmation with compassion.
Yeah.
I noticed something in that it kind of made me more flexible.
You enjoyed life more?
Well, flexible in the sense that things I wouldn't do before, I had to let them come in, or, you know, whatever idea, or somebody did something that previously I would respond immediately, give him a piece of my mind, how I feel about it. But this time, I will just wait and be patient with the person and maybe even go along with him.
Okay.
It's almost completely different from my real self.
No, this is your real self. You're talking about your habitual self.
Okay.
Yeah, but your real self is like this. Of having, I mean, you don't need to give away your mind. You may need it someday. When you talk about giving someone a piece of your mind, you might want to save it. It might be useful. But I think that's a really good indicator of the difference between air and water, isn't it, Magnus?
It is.
That you spared yourself a lot of resistance. And I think that's what everybody is indicating. That was certainly my experience too. Even though I did get sort of a flu-type reaction to loading 100 bales of hay in the hot sun. But it's okay. It's not devastating. And of course, yeah, that's really cool. So because we're moving into Earth, we're going to do walking in strength. And you'll see as we go on and study Earth characteristics, the strength is not strong like Charles Atlas or Hercules. It's endurance, longevity, stability, permanence, being well-rooted, well-anchored, being confident in who I am. I think because water enters Earth with compassion brings us to that place. And so the more that we are in compassion, the more that we find our roots and find our ability to stand, hold our position, be anchored, well anchored, whatever is going on around us. So you all did well with that. Anybody do a water bowl? Randy, did you do a water bowl?
Alan, I tried to do a water bowl, but I've had a really nasty cold for the last almost week, and it just didn't want to work. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I didn't get you all to do one in class, and I did that with the other class, and it probably wasn't fair, so you didn't have a chance to actually experience it. Let's see what others did. Dan, did you do one?
Yeah, I do. I've been doing them every week for various things.
So you've gotten quite used to it.
Oh, yeah.
And would you say, as encouragement to other people, that practicing it makes it considerably easier?
Oh, absolutely. You can very, very quickly conform the bowl and add the water in and get it clear. And I mean, within just a matter of a minute or something like that, I'm already set and ready to go now.
Sure. And have you been using it for communications primarily or more for divination things? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about some of the results you're getting with that and what you notice. That'll be helpful for people.
One thing, and you'll know what I'm talking about on this, Alan, I was trying to communicate with someone and was getting some communication, some answers back, and then finally the communication, what I was getting back, kind of stopped. So that was good for me to know that, because then I abandoned trying to keep up that communication and went on to something else instead of spinning my wheels there.
Uh-huh. Any indications as to what that could have referred to or indicated?
I feel like that there was going to be more problems there had I pursued that path.
Right, right. It could have gotten into some stuff from their past that was weighing on them.
Yeah, and I felt like it was more on their end than on mine.
It was, because otherwise, you see, if it had been on your end, do you know what would have happened instead? No, but there would have been something else that would have happened. Your water flow into your bowl would have stopped.
Okay, yeah, yes. I've never had that happen, but yeah.
Right, right. But it would be more of an indicator that the problem is in you.
Okay.
How about other communications? Have you had a chance to verify in life the reality of any of your water bowl communications?
Yes, I used it to collect some money.
Oh, good. Tell us about that. That'll be exciting for people. I see everybody getting ready to do a water bowl. Yes? Oh, none of you all are owed money, I guess, huh?
I had some outstanding invoices for some work that I had done, and the individual was not responding to my letters of second notice and such as that I sent out. So I had a talk with them in the water bowl, and then I got a call that said I need to set up something with you so that I can make payments on this because I can't pay it all right now. And I said, that's wonderful. I'll be glad to do that.
Cool. That's really good. So now you see, what you found out is two very important things. That person wanted to pay you, but they were, this is so typical of human behavior, but for their reference, if they couldn't pay you all at once, it would just put it off. You know, it's like a hidden guilt factor, or a lack of self-esteem, whatever you want to call it. But you see, your water bowl message pushed them higher up on that. And you open the door so they could call you and say, hey, let's take care of this. And, of course, as a result, they feel better and you feel better.
And in all fairness, I must say also that I sent some boxes with messages in it also. I've already learned in the doing what we're doing that it's better to cover more than one base and try more than one one avenue.
Absolutely. That's the whole point of magic. That's right. That's real good, Dan. Helen, how about you? Did you do a water bowl?
No, actually, this was the first week I didn't do any of the assignment at all.
Magnus, did you?
I didn't. When I got to doing it, I was in doubt about something.
Okay.
When I wanted to seek for reference, this compassion thing that made me kind of way too flexible.
Okay. Don't explain. If you didn't do it, you didn't do it. I don't need to know why, okay?
Okay.
Because that just takes up class time. What I'd rather do instead is have us all do one right here and now. Okay? You all ready? Make sure you've got a water blue color in front of you. Anybody not have one? Was that Randy?
I've got it.
Okay. Did you sigh?
Well, I'm congested, Alan.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. No, I wasn't sure. Are you okay with doing it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, okay, form your bowl. In other words, put your fingers together, rest them on the desk in front of you or some convenient... Armchairs are great, plus a desk. Are you all ready? Helen, you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
You're good. Okay. Now, go ahead and form a spout up right below your collarbone on the left side. And start a flow. You've got to get a bowl, a nice round bowl below your arms. Your arms are the rim. See your bowl, whether it's in your mind's eye or however you see it, see it. If you need to have your eyes shut, that's fine. It's better, though, if you look at your water blue color and start a flow of water blue energy down into the bowl. It can either fall like a waterfall or run down your chest like a mountain stream. It does not matter. And just notice that it starts very quickly coming up and filling the bowl. And as it comes up to the rim, starts circulating that water through your hands, up your arms, both arms, and let it flow down throughout your whole body because it's very cleansing and nourishing. And then it'll flow right on back up to the spout and back into your bowl. And let it circulate for a little bit, and as it's circulating, sense what the color of the surface and what the what is the surface like? What is your water bowl like? Is it wavy, choppy, clear, calm, clouds, rainy, stormy? Do you have great sea serpents in it, or is it pretty clear and okay? Just notice, what does it seem like to you? And just keep it circulating. So, Helen, what does yours feel like to you? What does it seem like?
Well, the minute I started doing it, my breathing rate changed.
Good, okay.
It became much calmer.
Good.
And it looks, there's just a very, very slight movement to it.
Okay, so pretty calm.
Yes.
And the color looks nice, water blue?
Yeah.
Okay, if you want to calm it more, just sort of take a little bit deeper breath. And just allow any excess fire energy to dissipate with the out-breath, and it'll get even calmer. But that feels like a good water bowl to me. So that's a useful one.
Okay.
So you can keep circulating it, and then whenever you're ready, you can stop the flow and pull the water back in and dismantle your bowl. Now you know you can do a water bowl. Magnus, how does yours feel to you?
It feels great.
Okay. So no problem. That's how you do a water bowl. So like I say, you also can stop the flow whenever you want to and pull the water back in and dismantle your bowl. Randy, how about yours?
Mine, I can't see the color.
Okay.
The water.
Just relax. How does the surface feel? Does it feel smooth or is it a little choppy?
It's sort of smooth.
Okay, good.
I have light reflecting off of it.
Okay, that's why you can't see the color.
Mm-hmm.
There's some light, there's some glare. That's okay. Shift your focus a little bit, so rather than looking at the surface, look mm-hmm. down an inch or so into the surface. And see then what the color looks like.
Well, I want to say it's kind of dark.
Okay, no problem. You've been sick, so that well may be. So what you want to do is start with your breathing. Pull in some nice, clear air.
Okay.
You know, and let that air circulate through your lungs and then in, out into the water that's circulating through your body as the water flows down into the bowl. See if it doesn't begin to lighten up some. And Dan, I know yours looks fine, I'm sure. Anything you want to comment?
I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. So, Rand, is it lightening up any?
Well, I feel lighter.
That's good. So your water's going to get lighter, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had some apprehension or some doubt, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, that's no problem. That's no problem. This is diagnostic. We want to find out what's going on. This tells us. So go ahead and stop your flow whenever you want to and pull the water back in till it's all emptied out, and then you can dismantle your bowl. Take your time. There's no hurry. You can keep doing it while I'm talking with you. But this is how you do a water bowl. As Dan told you all, it's very easy, it's very quick, does not need to take a long time. When you want to start using your water bowl, look not at the surface, but a little bit below the surface, and don't push on it. Don't try to force it. When you want to communicate with a person, call the person's name and wait. Be patient. Wait for them to show up in the water bowl. Don't get anxious. Don't get needy about it. Don't get assertive. Just be patient. Just want to see them there and know that they're going to come there because you called them.
Alan, I don't remember in terms of dismantling it. Do we take the water back up the spout?
No, not up the spout. You turn the spout off and you pull the water back in through your hands.
Okay.
You know, until it's empty. And then you dismantle the bowl by just opening your fingers and the bowl just snaps away and vanishes.
Okay.
So that's good. So now you all know you can do a water bowl. Did anybody try the shower or the tub litany exercise? Randy?
No, I didn't.
That would help your cold.
It will.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure will. Because, you see, you can get rid of a lot of that tension and stress factor that, you know, feeds the cold.
Ah. Well, I'll do that.
Yes, you can do that. That will be helpful.
I will do that.
Also, it's even if you've got a cold and you've got someone you can do the water exchange exercise with, you won't contaminate them, but it will help because the more you flow your own water too, you know, that the or you're going to just release stuff into the air, into the atmosphere, and so forth. And as you're cleaning somebody else's water, you're inevitably cleaning.
Oh.
Can't help it.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, so,
Helen and I were going to get together on Friday night and do a lot of this stuff, and we called each other, and both of us were not feeling well. I was already sick, and she was having a sore throat. And
yeah, I understand.
We didn't get together.
Right. Well, do so as soon as you can. And amaze one another at how much you can do. And then amaze us in class by telling your stories.
All right.
Dan, did you do a shower or tub litany?
I didn't do one this week, but I have done those. And I can tell a difference when I do.
Good. Magnus, how about you?
Yes, I did the shower. I did shower many times, but
and you did the litany?
Yes, but I, you know, I didn't do the one laying down on the bathtub.
No, that's okay. But you did the shower one.
Yes.
What did you notice?
It was quite relieving. I may not have, you know, used exactly the words word to word because in the shower, some of them I forget I had to make up, but it was okay.
Yeah, right. One thing you can do is write them on a card and laminate it and tape it up in the wall above the shower.
Okay.
If that'll help you remember.
Yes.
But even getting close helps. Yeah, but it's only but three lines. I'm sure that, you know, with a little practice, you'll remember it. So that's good. Yeah.
Alan, that was one exercise I did do.
Oh, did you? Really?
Yeah, and I liked it.
So tell us about what you noticed.
I felt a decrease in my fire level.
Oh, so you did notice that?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because water flows like that, it will carry considerable amounts of fire. It's more effective than just trying to dump fire. I find, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone do any of the exploration exercises? There's 5, 6, 7, and 8. I did all 4 of them. Did any of you all do any of those? I didn't mention it in class, But realize that if you look at your notes, it tells you what the homework exercises are right at the beginning of the exercise portion. Oh, let me flip back to that so you all know what I'm talking about here.
I have that in front of me.
Oh, yeah. Where it says exercises?
Yes.
Right. So that's how you know. If I forget to tell you, it says do the ritual, do explanations 5, 6, 7, and 8 for 15 minutes each day, and so forth. These are really cool. I don't know. So nobody undertook them?
I did some of them.
Did you? What would be an example, Dan, of that first one that says, let me read it so you all know what I'm talking about here. Choose a characteristic that air and water have in common. Correlate the physical behaviors of these two elements to mental and emotional processes and identify the differences between air and water on both physical and non-physical levels. Tell us one of those, and then I'll give you one.
Okay. Well, one that I particularly got into was the characteristic of reflective. And the physical behavior would be that water is reflective, that you can see an image on water, but air is not reflective. And the mental and emotional behavior would be that you can reflect on emotions because you have images that are associated with them, but it's very difficult to reflect on a thought because it leaves and you can't see it.
Okay. Well, when you said that air is not reflective, you meant only in a sense of physically so?
Right.
What's a mirage?
I don't know, because every time I got there, it was gone.
Yeah, but you saw it from a distance.
I've always thought that was a vapor, a water vapor.
That's what science says. But let me ask you something. Does it have a silvery shimmering to it?
Yes.
That's air.
Okay.
So, have you ever seen a ghost?
I've never seen one. I've felt the presence, but I've never seen one.
Okay. So then that's part of probably why you wouldn't have been aware of that. However, that phenomena is a light refractive phenomena in air. It's not water. Which allows us to see them. It takes some energy on their part. Excuse me. I see my doggy Tether, who's on the other side, quite frequently. But it's really amazing. She moves very fast, oftentimes. Sometimes I see her and feel her brush my leg at the same time. Other people see her too, not just me. But that's an air phenomenon, not a water phenomenon. That's air reflective. Her spirit actually reflects her past physicalness. It's an interesting phenomena. But I like, you know, what you did with that. That was cool. Here's what I did. I did reactive. Reactive air is squirrely and very unpredictable, fast-moving, erratic, like a dust devil. Water reactive tends to be more constant and held in place like a waterfall or even a flood up until the point at which water explodes and then, of course, goes into mutability. Reactive thoughts usually get quickly expressed in one way or another, mostly verbally to someone or in one's head. Reactive emotions cause brooding and affect one's attitudes and behaviors over a long period of time, changing one's appearance even. So these are really easy, you guys. But Dan, wouldn't you say that this helps clarify the characteristics for you?
Yeah, just to be involved in them more than just reading through the list.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Alan, I have one for Exploration 6.
Okay, that'd be fine. That's the next one. Go ahead. Do you want to, let me just mention what it is to everybody in case people haven't looked at their notes. That's ways in which air and water interact on the physical plane, and then similarities in terms of thoughts and emotions. Go ahead.
Well, say you have a strong wind on water. It makes the water choppy.
Yes, we call that a squall.
Ah, yeah.
I did the same one. Go ahead.
In any case, the mental-emotional interaction I would have is that you have a pretty calm emotional state, and then your thoughts whip up the energy kind of, in a way, the interaction of the two, I think, might create a little fire, actually, but...
Well, it has to, because moving air is fire in it.
Yeah, and so you get...
It ruffles the surface of your emotions, right?
Yeah, so...
It doesn't run very deep, does it?
What?
It doesn't run very deep.
What doesn't?
The ruffling of the air on the surface doesn't affect very deep.
Oh, no, it doesn't. But it can, sort of like maybe put you into a doubt state.
That's right. But it, like I say, it's. Have you noticed that sort of thing? It's here today and gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like a squall on the water, particularly if you're sailing, because you watch for those, because it can make a very fast effect on your sail, because they change direction very quickly, and they come and go very quickly. And so... the effect on our emotions of, you know, critical thoughts or, you know, fiery thoughts, impulsive thoughts, they can be sudden, but they don't last. And they don't go very deep. All right, right on. Anybody do number 7? That's the one that how fire and water interact. No one?
I did one.
I do.
Oh, Magnus, Dan, you do it, and then Magnus.
No, I did 5 and 6.
Oh, you did 5 and 6. Well, we'll back up and get you to do one of those in a sec. Dan, go ahead.
Okay, the one I did, physical interaction between fire and water, that fire excites water into motion. And for emotional interaction, our desires or the fire within excites our emotions and excites us into action.
Oh, cool. Okay. You know, when you were saying that, I got the image of a hot spring in Yellowstone or a geyser as the fire in the water.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah. Go ahead, Magnus.
Yes, on exercise 5, I think I did easy flow.
Okay.
Water. I used, I'm trying to pull up my, this thing here. I used, you know, I compared the two. The easy flow of air, you know, it moves fast and kind of doesn't a jerky movement, while water is mood. I compared it to thought and emotion, how thoughts can come and go in a moment. If you don't take action on that thought, it will just pass away.
Right, you forget, right?
Huh?
You forget.
You forget.
Yeah, right. And then, with water?
With water, on this side, I use emotion. Emotion, you know, kind of drags, you know, in that moment, drags. After a while, it will fade away.
Yeah, it really, well, yeah, right on. So the emotion lasts a lot longer, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Right, that's good. So, suggest you all work on those a little. They're really fun and very useful. I'll tell you why they're so useful. Because by a week from now, we're going to be ready to look at, I'm going to take one of you in class, whoever wants to volunteer, and we're going to run through your entire four-element mix. And then we're going to all adjust your balances in class. And then you all get a chance to tell us how that works. So it's really useful to be able to tell the difference between air and water, because these are your mediators. So fire and earth are not mediators. And so the mediators are how you make your changes. That's what a mediator is. It's a changing energy, an energy of change, an energy of transformation. And if you can't distinguish in a person pretty easily what is air and what is water in their behaviors, characteristics, in their mannerisms, in their attitudes, and so forth, you don't have much. You still might be able to get some change. Not saying you can't. You will be able to. However, it will take a lot more work, because you won't have a good sense of how to use the mediators to your advantage. In that, because generally when you do a prescription to change a person's entire inner set of balances, which would create all their outer states, rarely would you need to do more than 6, 8, 10 boxes to do it. The whole works. But if you don't understand your mediators, you'll end up doing 20 or 30 boxes to do it, and you'll wipe yourself and the person out trying to do it. Too much change. And it won't hold. So it may seem like these exercises may seem not very significant to you all, but I'll tell you, this is the foundation of magic energy handling. And that's why I keep saying to you all, do these. Because this is where you really, if you can express these differences in these simple statements, you're able to recognize the differences in someone else. So, enough said on that subject. Any questions on water at all? Boxes, anything before we go talking about Earth? Randy?
I'll probably have some questions, but I might have to come to the lab and
you're welcome to come to the lab.
Yeah.
Dan, any questions?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
Oh, good. Alan?
Not at this point.
Oh, okay. Magnus?
I have questions, please.
Okay.
Some of them may take us back a little bit. Question number one is, in any type of box messages,
which I try as much as I can to make the message short.
Right.
Three words. But in some cases, it seems to me making it up to four words might make more sense than three, but I don't know if we are allowed to do that.
Yeah, you can.
You know, if we can extend more than, you know, three words.
You can. You can. Just write your message very, see it very clear in the box, okay?
But is there any limit to, does it have any limit? You know, like,
well,
what is that, or three is minimum?
No, there's no, the problem is that in a message box, if you try to put too much in, it's not as apt to be clear to the receiver. And that's why a water bowl, like what Dan was saying, if you really need more conversation, also if you want to see how they respond to your communication, that's what's so good about a water bowl. Because you'll actually see the person react, and that's a true reaction.
Water bowl is just absolutely amazing. It's the most fun thing that I know to do.
Wow.
Yeah, it really is so. It's probably one of the best tools that we teach in this entire course. There are so many uses, and it is so dramatic. If you go watch Harry Potter movies, and all that they do in a crystal ball or any instrument like that, magic mirror, if that's what a water bowl is like, it's just like that. When you get so you know how to use it, it takes some practice. Mostly the practice is getting your mind out of the way, getting your doubts out of the way.
And we don't need permission from whomever we want to communicate with, because
no.
That's no reference account.
Right. And that's the beauty of it, because rules of the road say you have a right to any information that exists in this universe, free and clear. In other words, you have a right to find out anything you can. That's what we're here for. And you're not probing. You see, if we had to probe someone into their inner world to get that information, perhaps that would be invading their sacred space. But the fact is that everything about us is written on the surface and emanating out. There are no secrets. It's all there. We broadcast it all. In fact, most of us, if you pay attention, in the very parenthetical statements we make all the time, we tell all our secrets. If you just listen to people, don't listen to their declarative statements or their gossip or anything else. Just listen to their parenthetical statements. And people will be talking along and talk about a blue streak, and they sound like they are the greatest philosopher in the world, and then they'll make this amazing parenthetical statement, which they don't even know they make. Oh, I'm really full of shit. And then they'll keep on talking. You've never heard people do things like that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's the truth. It's not the true truth. That's what they think about themselves.
Alan, what would probing look like?
Well, it would look like someone is having a conversation with you and they're very intent and they want to know something and you don't want to tell them. And you start to use air insulator to prevent them, and then all of a sudden you feel this hot, searing sensation inside and you feel like you're being pried open like a can.
Okay.
And you feel very uncomfortable and like you're being invaded. That's what probing would feel like.
Okay.
You ever get that feeling even when nobody was there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, somebody trying to probe you. That's also why when we get to a Thames, we'll learn to cut lines so that people can't, and with plates, we'll do the same thing, so that people can't probe you, or you end it right then and there. Okay, so let's move on to Earth. One treat that we haven't done it yet, but we're going to sometime this week. I used to play this in class, so it just isn't time. But instead, we're going to put on the website, and you all can download or listen to it. My original teacher at Church of Seven Arrows, George Dew, who's no longer in body, but he was a great teacher, and he came to one of the basic magic classes I was teaching in Boulder some years ago. It was almost 15 years ago. And he attended class, and he talked. It was in this very class, Earth 1, and he taught a number of stories of his experience and also about where the elementals all got named and how it all happened way back to King Solomon's times. I thought you all might enjoy hearing him and what our classes used to sound like years ago.
Fascinating.
Is it on the website now?
No, it's not been put up yet.
Okay.
But sometime this week we'll be able to get it up. I have to find the tape, and Stephanie has to make a transpose it into the computer. But we have a device that does that, so that you all will enjoy. He's a quite remarkable chap. You'll pick up on it right away. And you also... George was irascible. If people... Well, let me tell you this. In all the years that I studied with him, I don't think I've rarely ever heard anyone come to class without having done all their homework. George would pierce you with fierce eyes that shredded your soul.
There's a benefit to teleconferencing.
Yeah. His favorite way of reducing any of us to mush was to say, okay. Like if he didn't approve. So, you all will get to enjoy my teacher. So, Earth. Fascinating element is Earth. Physically, any solid at all. And of course, it's a mix of all of the elements up till then. So Earth is really just air, fire, and water slowed down and made more dense. In this hemisphere north, the direction is north. And they say, the Native Americans say, and often tribal people said, life starts at the north, but you go to the east to start gaining knowledge, which is air, of course. The tool is the plate or the shield. Of course, we'll use a plate. But the old shield that you carried into battle was an earth tool. And in the tarot, there's a five-pointed star with a circle around it on that connotes discs or plates, which is called the pentacle, whereas a shield or a plate is often magically called a pentacle, P-A-N-T-A-C-L-E. So, unlike the seven arrows shield, which you all can see on the website that is in constant circulation, the five-pointed star only operates when you push or pull on it, and it operates from the base through the point. Okay, part of a person, of course, is the physical body. Physical level, the bones, body solids, mental and emotional levels, stability and practicality. And the spirit level, and this is important to note, It is serenity and certainty of beingness, the knowing that I exist. The I am part of me and the awareness of it. So what that is quite important about is that there are a lot of people in our societies today who do not have certainty of beingness. They do not know that they exist. They have doubt about that. And part of the reason for that is because the only anchors a spirit has, the only two anchors a spirit can possibly have, two anchors, what we call anchor points. One is in a body when you have a body. The other is in the serenity or the knowledge of your beingness. That's a spirit ability. But if you are brought up to think that mind and logic and your thinking ability is an anchor, you can be quite crazy inside, because it is not an anchor and never will be. Part of the reason for that is, and I'm not going to explain this now because this is the stuff for the next course, but mind has no contact with the outer environment whatsoever. Directly. Therefore,
they should have told us to Descartes.
Well, yeah, I know that. Because the idea that I think, therefore I am, is totally fallacious, magically and shamanically. It makes no sense whatsoever. Now, if he had said, I think, therefore I'm in my head, that would be fine.
Yeah.
And Earth is about physical sensation, which is in present time. Thought is not in present time. The direction of view is past, towards the past, retrospect. Our records are recorded in our physicality. How is that so? Anybody know? What is our Akashic record? Did you get each lifetime?
I'm sorry, what was that, Alan?
What is our Akashic record that you get each lifetime?
I'm not sure. Is it a history of everything?
Yeah, but what is it? Where is it? It's the DNA.
Okay.
So that's a physical record. Uh-huh. It can be changed, but it's there. The elemental spirit is the gnome. Gnomes are very similar to humans than most of the other elementals, but they're much slower. They find us rather intolerable, much too fast and too mosquito-like. But you can find gnomes in granite outcroppings. Often when you see faces in mountainsides and things, that can be either the home of a gnome or the gnome itself. They like to decorate their homes with their own look-alike, so they can find them, of course. Or tapping rock noises, often at night in the distance. Gnomes like to tap and click rocks together. George has a funny story about a gnome. I think it was a gnome. It was a dryad and a gnome, I believe. Yeah, that you'll hear on that tape. And they are reclusive and grumpy. So be careful when you're dealing with gnomes. You want to be quite polite if you want them to respond. But they can tell you all kinds of history about areas. They're useful for that. So Not very many Earth characteristics. This will give us all a breathing spell. Just two colors that work. We're not going to work with black, which is pure Earth. Just grass green and Earth brown. So grass green is dynamic living Earth. Anything that's growing. And Earth brown is stable Earth. Anything that is grown and is stable and has strength. And then, of course, spiritual Earth is the vibrant black. That's like a black hole in space. Or a neutrino. Some of those subatomic particles. Okay. Non-mutable. Now, fire was non-mutable and Earth is non-mutable. Neither of them changed to other elements very readily without destroying, so to speak. It's not to say that Earth can't recombine with other kinds of Earth, but it does not readily change back into air, water, or fire without destroying it. Now, if you put it into a volcanic matrix, that's a whole different story because you're destroying it. It has strength, permanence, lastingness, the force of endurance, endeavor to persevere. It's different from power, which is the force of movement. Strength is the force of perseverance. Massive. It takes all three elements, air, fire, and water, to move Earth. Therefore, we say Earth is massive or resistant. Resistant to change, resistant to the force of motion. It also has weight, of course. Like water has weight. It's just more weight and more mass. Stabilizer. Now, up to now, we said air and water are stable. See, now this is the second characteristic that is shared in three elements, but not exactly, because it's stabilizer, which means it's more than just stable. It holds things in place. You could also say reliability. It gives form and shape and inherent inertia to things. Now, whereas water was absorptive, air is receptive. Earth is receptive. That means that it willingly and voluntarily pulls, not just allows, it sucks. Earth sucks. Yes, indeed. Earth is highly receptive to water and to emotions, especially water that carries fire and air. That's how you get it into Earth, because Earth pulls it and water penetrates it. Nothing passive about that. That's why Earth is a prime element, as is fire a prime element. There's nothing passive about its pulling ability. Earth is solid, neither expandable nor compressible, nor plastic. It is not, what is that word we use? I can't think of it. Shape malleable. It's not shape malleable. How about copper? what would tell you that copper or gold is not pure earth? Helen?
The fact that it's malleable?
Yeah, because you can hammer it and beat it into shapes, right?
Right.
You couldn't do that to pure earth. Anything that is a lot Earth without malleability.
Mm-hmm.
And Earth is an insulator. Now that's your third element that has insulator. which tells you something about the universe, does not transmit fire in of itself, making it an effective insulator. So an insulator produces boundaries and borders and has containment. You could also say an insulator is an isolator. The desire for independence is the wish to have insulator. Interdependence is a whole other issue. And Earth is prime feminine because of its pull and because of its nature of remaining in place and so forth.
Alan, when you mentioned interdependence, does the fact that Earth combines so easily with the other elements, is that a way of looking at it as being interdependent?
Yeah, right, because
okay.
It has its own anchor, you see. It is an anchor, so it is not codependent.
Right.
But it interplays. It permits. It allows the other elements to enter without highly or quickly changing its form or dislocating. So it interchanges without, say, losing its stability.
Okay.
Okay, so notes on Earth characteristics. Pure Earth is rare in our universe. However, we do see examples of it. You know, serenity of beingness is approaching pure Earth. But you see, that's kind of rare in our experience. But we can attain it. Okay. You all have probably heard this statement. What happens when irresistible force meets an immovable object? Wasn't that an old philosophical sort of conundrum? Randy, you'd know that sort of thing.
Yes.
So, as a magical student, Randy, what is the answer to that question? Or a student of magic, I should say. And a magical student.
Well, you have no movement.
I don't think so.
No?
That would defy the terms. There has to be movement.
Well, if the two are pushing against each other and they're both equal in strength
and force or power.
Yeah, then
something happens.
Explosion.
No.
A melding?
I said, who, what?
A melding?
Yes, but it's trickier than you think. It's actually clearer than you think.
Oh.
It's a melding of the forces, but what does that produce? This is not a big question.
A oneness?
A life?
Yes, it's a life, but what does it produce? There's a movement. It's so obvious.
A movement.
Yeah, absolutely. What is it? It is amazing to me. This is the very proof that magic is the basis of all science. And that in philosophy, that they could not understand this, that's the biggest question mark for me. Spin. All objects spin in this universe, except for totally caught or trapped ones, like the moon. But the moon spins just not around its own axis. It spins around other things. But that is when an irresistible force meets an immovable object, rotary inversion is the result.
You know, that's true, because I was, well, according to this science program on the universe I was watching the other night, said exactly the same thing. When two black holes approach each other, they spin around each other.
Right, right. Because they are experiencing in the proximity of one another both active and passive force directly.
Passive and active force.
Yeah.
Is this implying some kind of balance?
Well, it's why we have life in the universe. You said life.
I answered life, but I was thinking, like, well, just when I guess balance, how I'm seeing it is you can't have one without the other.
Well, that is correct. That is correct. You can't. I mean, I could teach a whole course on this very subject, but I'm not going to tonight. But you can't have the windings, the interpenetrating windings of force, positive and negative windings of light, is what all bodies in space exhibit around a central or vertical axis. That's what's called generative force. And it gives them spin. But as degeneration takes place, the vertical axis starts to compress and lose its integrity, and energy is given off at the equator in terms of rings of mass. Therefore, the planet Saturn, you understand that these planets, some astrology didn't say, let's take Saturn and make it the planet of death or limitation. No way. It is because of its form and the forces which it demonstrates. It takes on that. It's not arbitrary, because it does compress towards the equator and give off rings. That is the process of degeneration. And people do that too as they age. They lose their vertical axis because we're not taught how to maintain it anyway. And then we give off rings at our equator and we get plump towards the middle. Pleasingly plump. So, okay. Because of the curious nature of the color black in terms of pure earth, we avoid it magically in most of our operations. You'll work with it in intermediate shamanism, but not now. But we don't use black candles and that sort of thing, even though a lot of people do in the magical realms use gold and purple and black candles. They're too spongy and they're too unstable.
What about wearing black?
It's not the same thing. However, it's not saying that colors don't affect. You know, because you're not doing a magical operation around that color. Unless you are.
No.
Yeah. But I will tell you that colors do affect. In fact, years ago, I was visiting my chiropractor's office, and we used to have great philosophical battles about healing. And he said, well, I want you to see this case. And he took me in and introduced me to his family. And they had a, I think it was a 2-year-old, maybe it was a 4-year-old, I forget her age, little girl, and she had a serious heart problem. And he was treating her with some measure of success, so that she wasn't dying and all that. She was sort of surviving, but it was pretty tricky, and she was on the edge. And after I met her and observed his techniques of treating her and so on, adjusting her spine and all of that, and I took him aside and I said, Doc, do you think it might be useful to suggest to them that they stop having her wear bright red dresses all the time?
I'm sorry, I missed out a lot here. I'm sorry to cut you off. This something happened last week. I got disconnected.
Oh, really? You got disconnected? How long have you been gone?
After you said something about aging and, you know, earth giving out compression and giving out rain, all of a sudden my line went dead. I was hello for a long time. Then I had to hang up.
And dial back in.
Dial again, yes.
Oh,
I don't know if I missed so much.
You missed quite a bit, but you can pick it up on the recording.
Okay.
But I was just telling a story about a little girl who had heart problems, and she was, this was some years ago in Boulder, and she was being treated by a chiropractor, and, you know, her life was in danger. She was very unstable with these heart problems. But her parents always dressed her in bright red dresses. And she was not helping her heart any.
I'm trying to understand the connection.
Well, she had too much fire in her heart.
Ah. I see.
It was making it unstable.
Uh-huh.
And too high metabolism.
Mm.
And in a person that young, because children tend to be overheating anyway, it really makes their whole life force unstable. It's not enough earth, don't you see?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
They need a lot of grass green and nourishment and earth brown to build strong bodies. So without that and too much fire, they're just sort of like glowing all the time, and they can't, she would burn out her food. She wasn't holding her food energy well. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't know this, and I wasn't free to treat her there, so I had to be careful, but I would have asked her, does she eat all the time? And I bet she did, and I bet it just went right through her. She was too high fire. Right there. So, any questions on Earth characteristics or correspondences, anyone? Okay, so how do we handle Earth? I'm not ignoring the excesses and the shortages. You all know to look at those. I'm just not dwelling on them because I've got something else I want to do with you on this set. box techniques work great for Earth. And they're very useful because you can jam them directly in, taking them in the way we do, through the arms. Don't breathe them. Don't want to shut down your lungs completely. Grass green flows quite readily. Earth brown, if you use too dark a color, doesn't flow so well. And if you ever run into that problem, just put a little water blue in it. It'll flow better. And of course, where do you get rid of them? Into earth. How about that? You can just put them right in the walls, in the floor, in the ceiling, in concrete abutments. I would not put them into anything like water pipes because you might stop them up. And don't throw earth boxes at people's vital areas. Not a good thing to do. We'll study that in self-defense. So. Don't use dragon's breath with earth. That's kind of obvious. You can do direct flow with grass green, and you can do it with earth brown if you put some water in it. Okay. In your notes, there's a lot of things about healing with earth energies. Please read those. I'm not going to go over them right now, but we will go over them again in plates, particularly with broken bones. some of you all probably know that, about a month ago, I broke three bones in my foot? Did you all hear that story?
No.
Do you know I never put a cast on? I never stopped walking. And it's completely healed. All I did, well, aside from, of course, it got swollen and it was very painful and so forth, but I was never able not to walk. It was a little tricky walking sometimes, right at first, anyway. But we stabilized the bones with Earth Brown and then pulled a lot of water, a lot of fire and stuff like that. And then, not right at first, but after about a week, Stephanie took her plate, her key plate that you all will have in a few weeks or so, and she beamed Earthbound into the each of the bones, about 30, 40 seconds each, and they were totally rehealed, re-cemented, and now, like, it's been about a month, I would say, and there's nothing, it's just perfect. No pain, no swelling, no nothing, no bruising. Never was any bruising.
That's cool.
But typically for that, most people would have gone and had them set and had a cast and all that stuff, and then it would take months to heal if it ever fully healed. So that's the kind of work you can do with this kind of stuff. Obvious.
I'm not going to mention that at Kaiser.
You don't think I should tell them? Well, I shan't in that case. Okay, now, do read the notes on healing because they're important, because like with cancer, you want to always kill the tumors before you ever put grass green into them. You can put Earth Brown in to stop them from growing. Don't put grass green into anything you don't want to grow. But if any time you have to remove tissue or organ tissue, anything from the body, and you want to regrow it afterwards, grass green is very useful. Now this rooting, this thing about rooting, is a very useful exercise. It can be used in a lot of ways. So I want everyone to get comfortably seated, either on their chair, floor, or something, because we're going to practice rooting right now. So you get a chance to see what it's like. And let me know when you're ready, where you can be relaxed and sitting down on something, on the ground, on the floor, whatever.
Ready?
Okay. So just close your eyes. You can put your, if you're not holding the phone in your hand, you can put your hands on the floor too. Or whatever you're in contact with the floor is fine. If it's your butt or your feet, that's fine. That's where you want to root from. It doesn't matter whether you're on the ground floor or not. So what you want to do is just very slowly allow roots to grow. Psychic roots, just like tree roots, out of your feet or your hands or whatever is in contact with the floor or a chair, and just let those roots go right on down to the floor and then right on through whatever your flooring material is, whether it's carpeting or concrete or whatever, just right on through that, and they'll grow right on down through the subfloor. And if you're on a second or third floor, whatever, just right through the airspace of the floor below, if the people down there won't bother them, they won't even notice. And right through the next floor, and however many air spaces and floors you need to, until you actually reach the ground level. And then as your roots reach the ground level, this sort of being the opposite of Jack and the Beanstalk, they grow right on down into the earth. Right on down to the topsoil and the deeper soil, and you want your roots to go right down to bedrock, solid earth. And then enter, contact, right little rootlets into the bedrock, So you're really locked in. And then as you're just sitting there and relaxing with your breathing, as you inhale, any stress that you're feeling and so forth, allow it to come up, any excess fire, and then as you exhale, flow that energy, that excess energy, right down those roots, right into the earth, because your roots are deep and they will penetrate, they're penetrating the earth already. And so you can get rid of any excesses of fire and air, or even water, down those roots. And then, as you continue to breathe, allow, as you inhale them, from down in the bedrock, minerals will flow, any needed minerals will flow right up those roots, into your body and nourish you. Earth is nourishing. So you can be absorbing minerals up the roots and getting rid of unwanted materials and energies down the roots. They are two-way. Any of you that are having excess fire illnesses or excess water in your lungs, just let all that stuff, let all that trash, germs, viruses, collected, nonsensical beliefs, whatever, just flow down those roots. And minerals and vitamins from all those rock areas down there flow up your roots. Cool energies, sustaining energies, stabilizing energies, strength energies, giving you nourishment. And then when you're ready, you can stop that flow of energies and minerals and so forth up and down your roots. And then you can just very slowly begin to allow the roots to disconnect from out of the mineral and the rock, bedrock areas, and slowly start to retract, slowly start to pull back up, pulling back up through the subsoil of the earth and through the topsoil of the earth until finally they've reached earth level again. And then coming up through the concrete floor, subfloor, whatever, air spaces of other floors below, carpets, whatever, wood flooring, until they're right up to the floor that you're on. And then through that floor, right on up to, they reabsorb right into your body, into your, the soles of your feet, into your hand, palms of your hands, into the base of your spine, your legs, whatever they came out of, right back on up. And when they're completely back in you, then open your eyes and see how you feel. Randy, how do you feel?
Just a second, Alan. I had to turn my mute off. I don't know, I feel, just more grounded, I believe.
Okay. Dan? Ellen?
Also more grounded.
Magnus?
Refreshed.
Fresh?
Refreshed.
Yes, a reset. Thank you. So this is something you can do at any time, also with other people. Just don't forget to pull your roots up. Now, you can also use this technique if somebody is trying to push you around. Don't put your roots down very deep. But you'll find out if even a big person is trying to push and shove you, psychically or physically, If you root, they're not going to budge you. They can strain all they want. They will not be able to move you. In fact, years ago, one of George's basic magic classes had just learned this technique, and they all went out to a peace rally at Rocky Mountain Arsenal, out on Rocky Flats, where they used to make plutonium triggers for, you know, atomic bombs, whatever. And they were all demonstrating peacefully. And they all sat down on the ground. There were a lot of people there. But when the police came to try to pick up the basic magic students who were rooting, 5, 6, 7 police couldn't pick up even an old lady. Couldn't tear them off the ground and leave them there because they were rooting. If you're walking on ice or even driving on ice, you can root. You can root like the space people do with those boots that are magnetic. You put down little tiger claw roots out of the bottom of your foot and just clamp into the ice each step. Step carefully and deliberately, and then pick up those roots as you pick up your foot, or even through the tires of your car. I've done it, and it works. I did an experiment with my old Volvo, whose handbrake has, for years, didn't work until I had the whole assembly replaced. And then we used to park on a hill at our house, a slight hill. But the compression wasn't that great. It was a heavy, heavy car with a huge box on top, and it weighed so much that in first and reverse, it would roll down the hill. So I parked it on the hill and put roots down and left them down, and then it would stay, just in gear. It wouldn't roll down the hill. So there are a lot of ways you can use rooting for healing, for stability, for anchoring, and so forth. And also, practice the rooting, because when we get to psychic self-defense techniques, rooting is one of the major ways that you can pull down the energy of a whole crowd in terms of their excess fire. Also, you all had asked, well, how do I get rid of fireboxes or excess fire outdoors or in the woods? You do rooting. And you pass the energy down your roots into the earth, because you have penetrated earth with your roots. Therefore, you can do it. And so, the exit ritual is Sky Father and Earth Mother. Aha! Notice a change? Sky Father and Earth Mother, walking in strength, I greet you. Not sky above and earth below. You all got that?
Yeah.
Sky Father and Earth Mother, we're getting more intimate. Walking in strength, I greet you. So, questions on any of this earthy material? Randy?
No questions right now.
Good. And you all will let us know of your results when you all work together and such?
Absolutely.
Oh, we're excited. I can hardly wait.
I can't wait to work with somebody.
Yeah. Well, you've got lots of people around. Don't be shy. Dan, any questions or comments?
No. And I just wanted this afternoon before class started not too long, had an opportunity, my daughter had a headache, and so I had an opportunity to help her with that, and she asked me a little bit about, well, how did you do that? What did you do? So I got to break some ice with that, which was, like, way cool. So she has expressed an interest.
Oh, that's wonderful. How old is she?
She is 24.
Wow, that's really cool. So she found out that there was something else going on in the world that she was not aware of, huh?
Yeah, something that wasn't Southern Baptist.
Oh, really? She's been sort of programmed some into that?
Yes. So that was why it was kind of nice to be able to talk with her and that she was receptive to us.
That's wonderful. In fact, some years ago, I had a student who was deeply, fervently religious in that realm of things. And we sort of went back and forth a little bit about exit rituals and so forth. And I said, well, don't you pray to your Heavenly Father? And she said, absolutely. I said, and don't you pray to the Virgin Mother? And she said, absolutely. I said, well, what's wrong with saying my Heavenly Father above and my Virgin Mary below? She found that quite acceptable. So there's always ways. Helen, any questions or comments?
No. Well, one curiosity. I've worked with grounding cords. Do you know, is that considered similar to rooting or differently?
Could you tell me a little about it?
Well, I'll find out more. But basically, the way it was taught to me was a grounding cord basically comes from your tailbone and goes down into the center of the earth. And very similar, it brings up earth colors, and you can send down at any toxins in your body. The difference is that you're not asked to pull the cord back up.
So, if you don't pull it, well, all I can tell you is by experience, having given this exercise to a lot of people, and even having some people who tend to wander in their sleep and get in trouble, I'm not talking about physically, but in their dream states, out of body.
Yeah.
And I've had them do rooting when they go to bed at night, just like this, down from their body, around the bed, and into the ground, and into the earth. And almost in every case that I've heard of so far, when a person has gotten up and moved without taking up their roots, they have experienced physical damage in their body, oftentimes for months after.
Yeah, there must be some difference. I mean, there's a lot to it that sounds similar. I'll explain this, and then I'll see what I hear. The only
let your magic be tested.
Yeah.
The rules we wrote. I would not.
The difference I'm hearing is that this is just on the base of the spinal cord. It's never talked about as coming through hands or feet.
Yeah, but you can do rooting through the base of your spinal cord too.
Yeah.
Right. However, you see, there's a big difference between what most people call visualizing and when we do an energetic exercise, which is not visualizing.
Okay.
Because visualizing is only in air, right?
It's a little bit confusing.
When most people talk about visualizing, they are not differentiating that between imagining.
Well, I think with this visualizing, it would be more than just air because it's sensation also.
Okay. Okay, so then the question I have for you is, if you don't pull up that which you extend down, how come it doesn't limit your movement in some way?
It moves with you. It's like it's part of your body, and it moves with you.
Okay.
I mean, I've been doing it for years, and I've never experienced it with the grounding cord. I've never experienced...
Well, then you can verify the difference yourself better than any of us can.
Yeah, it's very curious to me. There must be something about it that's different.
There may or may not be. So the way you can tell is by your experience.
Okay.
You know, so do both, and then come back and tell us if they're the same or if there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then that way we can find out.
Okay.
You know? And that's the beta study magically, because you're doing it by virtue of your experience, you see.
Uh-huh.
And that's good. Cool. Magnus, you had a question?
Oh, yes, sir. The question is basically because sometimes it's confusing, like I chip in. Where do we draw a line between visualization and imagination?
Okay, good. That's a great question. Magically, what we talk about is called an energetic markup. Okay, we don't use the word visualize. I prefer not to, because it's too easy to get it confused. An energetic markup is actually work in three elements. And it has even indicators of the fourth element. In other words, if I can do an entire operation without moving anything, my body at all, but I see myself do every single step just the way I would physically, that is an energetic markup. An energetic markup has all the same causative reality as any physical movement or any physical counterpart to it. How do you know if it does? By the result. How do we evaluate our magic? By our results. Altered procedures produce altered results. Now, the experiment that I refer you to is one done, and I may have mentioned this in class before, by a major basketball team, in which they divided the team into three parts. This is in the book Quantum Healing or Ageless Mind and Timeless Body by Deepak Chopra. I forget which book. And they had one-third of the team practice foul shots for a month, an hour a day. They had one-third of the team do no practice at all. And the last third sat in a chair for an hour each day, seeing themselves do foul shots just the way they would actually physically do them. And then after a month, they tested each third of the team. The third that practiced foul shots got very high scores. The third that did not practice got low scores. The third that sat in the chair an hour a day, seeing themselves practicing foul shots, got the same high scores as the group that did practice foul shots. Questions or comments? Anybody? That's an energetic markup.
That sometimes rather than calling it visualization, they call it imagery work so that you get to bring the other elements in.
Yeah, well, in our school, we use the term energetic markup.
Yeah, that's fine.
So we all know what we're talking about. And because later on, when you all are doing rituals, there are occasionally times when you simply can't, like you're away. Traveling, and all your ritual stuff is at home, and you couldn't take it with you. And you can actually do the entire ritual as an energetic markup. And of course, what is a water bowl? Dan, isn't that an energetic markup?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But what is the world made up of? This whole world and everything in it could be an energetic markup. So, interesting stuff. Tell us if there are any other... Did that answer it for you, Magnus?
Oh, yes, sir.
Cool. It was a great question. Thank you. So, this was a wonderful class. I thromp you all soundly on the backs for it. That's approval, of course.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Alan?
Yeah, yes?
I had emailed Stephanie back about times to do phone work for the second part of the bank clearing?
Yes.
Do you know your schedule for next week, or should I wait for an email back?
Oh,